Oh, an email from Nowhere to Run with Chris White. Bible Prophecy Talk 2.0 unretired new project.
He's back. He's back.
You're listening to Revelations Radio News with Andrew Hoffman and Tim Kilkenny, a listener-supported podcast located at revelationsradionews.com.
Podcasting to you from an extremely sunny forest of Meadowdale, Washington, where I am feeling a little bit less gravity around here. I am one of your hosts, and my name is Tim Kilkenny.
And from a warm and sunny Cascade Locks, Oregon, I am only two of three hosts. I'm Andrew Hoffman.
And from the sunny climes, I don't know what a climb is, but in northern Georgia, Chris White.
Yay! Woo! The crowd goes wild.
Does anybody know what a climb is?
It's like climate.
It's short for climate, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
But I didn't even know you were in Georgia. I thought you were still in Tennessee.
No, we are in the mountains of North Georgia. We moved probably 7 years ago.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Technically, it's like a population of like 150 something people here. So, but it's a little bit more than that. It's a kind of a touristy spot.
Very cool.
How are you liking rural versus where you used to live, kind of suburban?
Oh my gosh, there's absolutely no competition. My wife and I joke about it all the time because I mean, we go, you know, visit family or out doing whatever vacation and stuff. Because the nearest, like for example, to get to a Best Buy, it's like at least an hour and a half drive. But then you come back and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad to be home. And there's so few people here. You know, I went to sort of where we used to be around Middle Tennessee to watch a play with my niece in it. And that it was just so crowded. I mean, it was so many people. It was like overwhelming. And it was always like that before. Like we always kind of felt claustrophobic now when we go back into the city. And we both grew up in the middle of the city, you know, so it's not like we're not used to it. But it's just you get really used to not having people around.
I can see that. As I get older with the kids and stuff, I'm definitely starting to maybe yearn for the slowing down of life. You're not super close to any big metropolises over there, Andrew. And your town, more than 100, but probably less than 5,000. What are you guys looking at there?
Oh, definitely less than 5,000. Yeah,
it's a
Cascade Locks is small. I mean,
it's a sleepy little town.
Yeah.
Well, I am still here for a front row seat to the fall of civilization in the communist empire of Seattle. So, I understand the crowded feeling. I ran down to Seattle to borrow something from a buddy actually earlier this afternoon, and my son came with me, and we got down there, and my son's like, "What is going on? Where there's a lot of cars?" I was like, "Yeah, there's a lot of people here." So. Anyway, it's a sunny day. So in sunny days in the Northwest, everybody gets out. So it just seems more busy than usual.
Well, I always envision when I'm there, like it's just that there's too many people to adequately deal with any kind of serious event. I mean, we're just so lucky to not have had anything terribly serious because, I mean, the gridlock would happen immediately and there would be very little getting out of anything, you know, the city in a situation like that. If people go crazy in this day and age with like, no compass whatsoever. I don't know. I guess everybody was always crazy and didn't have a compass, but it just seems like it's worse.
No, I agree. And there is, that's one part about Seattle. There's no way out, right? There's only one way in, one way out, more or less. It's surrounded by water on both sides and then mountains kind of far off. So yeah, if something goes wrong and you know, not like anything can go wrong, not like there's a giant volcano that's been dormant for hundreds of years. That's really, really close. Nothing like that. So I'm sure everything will be fine. But
well, you guys are near that soup. I always think of that super tsunami plate lit thing off the coast of somewhere up there.
Yep. Not too far from here.
And that's like a surety, right? Like, oh, well, one day it'll kill us all.
Yeah. Pretty much.
That was one of those, you know, well, we think it only happens one every several million years. And then it was, well, maybe more, maybe it was like 1,000 years and we're overdue for it. And everything west of I-5, you know, could be gone at some point.
But probably not soon. And then there was like a tremor that had caused some people to panic. So I don't know. It is interesting. God's got us. Kind of regardless of the direction it all goes, but it is gorgeous. It's just, there isn't, you know, I know Chris, you were up here for 2013 ish in that area for some interesting times, but it's just gorgeous. We love it here just because of all the
I'm sure the people nature. on the Pompeii, they were in Pompeii and they were saying to themselves, you know, this is a great place. Look,
there's a volcano, but
I mean, that is a beautiful little pointy mountain there, right on the sea.
Fair enough. You know what's funny? I am less scared of Mount Rainier than I am of the government here.
Yeah. So. Okay.
Anyway, it's great to have you on. I think that hopefully many of our listeners are familiar with you and your work. I will just say kind of a personal testimony that, you know, you are a lot of the reason I even got into podcasting. I found your stuff through YouTube, kind of searching around for the truth on YouTube, and then found your stuff and started messaging you and listening to your show and Frank and Chris' show and then on into other stuff. And it kind of opened a whole new door. So, you know, it's kind of crazy that you took a break for a while and now you're back and you're doing the Bible prophecy stuff and even doing news. And, you know, I don't know if you came back at the wrong time because it doesn't seem like there's anything going on with Israel or any kind of news in that regard. So thank you for coming on to the show and for doing podcasting all these years. And, you know, what kind of brought you back? What was like the thing that was like, oh, well, this is it? Because for us last year, we have been talking about so much stuff and it was all just kind of, you know, conjecture, maybe this could happen. But then, you know, the whole, you know, coronavirus thing happened and Andrew and I are talking to each other and messaging. And it's just like, what is, you know, we have to talk about this stuff. This is all the stuff we were talking about and now it's happening.
Right. The thing that brought me back was unrelated. It was the Dr. Alan Kirshner over there at Eschatos Ministries we'd worked together in the past on his ministry pre-wrath. The pre-wrath rapture is a sort of timing thing of the rapture, and I was always very supportive of the idea and, you know, really wished it could do more. So he called kind of out of the blue and said, hey, would you make a movie, or you want to make a movie? And it was weird that in the back of my head, I always knew that was the call, that like if Alan Kirshner ever called me and said, make a movie about pre-wrath, I would just be like, all right, well, I guess I'll do it. So exactly the thing that I had in my head is like, well, if that happens, I'll come back. So it did. And it took me year plus just to even get on the same sort of page and try to figure it all out and get the research done. And somewhere in the midst of that, I started podcasting, just talking through the things I was learning or whatever. But and then the coronavirus stuff happened in the midst of that and just sort of started talking about that at the time. And of course, the people that were watching it early on kind of were in the place of nobody, you know, the first moments of freak out is like, nobody cares about this. Like, hey guys, something's happening in China. Look at all these people. And like, people were like, da, 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 da. And so then, you know, you make that transition between, wait a minute, right. I don't know about all this stuff. Or at least they're clearly using it for the old agendas that we were talking about for so many years.
Right, right. And then there was a plethora of people who were coming out with some crazy, crazy theories. And it was good to see you respond to them, at least even in meme form, where it was just like, hey, don't put on a mask. That's the mark of the beast. Like just crazy, you know, kind of overreactions. People are freaking out and going on YouTube. Clearly the mask is the mark of the beast. We got to stop this. You know, the end times are here. And it's like, come on, everybody calm down. Take a deep breath. Let's actually get back to what the Bible says and try not to freak out.
Yeah, there's lots and lots and lots of freaking out going on about that. And, you know, my burden at this point is mostly for the Christians and, you know, the people that maybe think similar with regard to a lot of this stuff. The conspiracy Christians, I think of them as, because I do have projects underway for sort of, you know, just general helpful stuff, like stuff about data and the vaccine stuff and other kind of outreach stuff in terms of evangelism. But the stuff that I'm trying to, if you will, the debunking stuff that I used to do, you know, Ancient Aliens debunked and debunk this and debunk that. I'm kind of reserving that for that little niche group, because I don't, they're as prone to anybody else as going astray with all this stuff, but their theories typically, they're will go a little bit crazier, and it's not a good look when you do it, you know, because that's, I feel like that stuff is going to be used against Christians as well. If they, for example, the Mark of the Beast thing that you mentioned, thinking that the vaccines are the Mark of the Beast, it's just nowhere close to what the Bible said. Bible's talking about a false prophet that literally causes everybody to get this mark in order to buy and sell. I know, of course, that's the thing that everybody latches onto, but there's so much more. I mean, he's calling fire down from heaven. It's associated with worship. It happens after the midpoint. That is to say, a man has to have already sat in the temple, a non-built temple in Jerusalem, declare himself to be God, and then the mark of the beast can happen. Anyway, all that stuff. Same thing with the UFO stuff. So I'm like totally okay with UFOs being whatever. They can be actual UFOs from another planet. They can be government projects. They can be demons. Any of those is fine. In fact, I kind of prefer one of those because it would be kind of fun to theorize about it and figure stuff out about it or whatever. It would be a wonderful research thing, but it's not. What we're seeing now is just this total obvious sham. If you look into it, it's two producers, particularly the guy from Blink-182, his organization, and another guy, Jeremy Corbell, two film producers that stand to make so much money off this and have leaked these videos. It's a big, long saga. We could talk about it if you want, but it's easy to debunk those. And once you see how easy it is to debunk those, you'll never see them the same way.
Well, Chris, if you could, because you've done whole episodes on that, let's make sure we tell people where to find your sure. materials now. So,
well, I mean, these days I'm mostly just doing the podcast. It's just easier for me. BibleProphecyTalk.com. I do a news show where I mostly talk about coronavirus stuff and vaccines and lockdowns and stuff once a week. And then do some kind of study of some kind, Bible-related, another part of the week, if it all works out. So BibleProphecyTalk.com, subscribe to the podcast, et cetera, et cetera. I do have YouTube videos, but I haven't really been focusing. My main YouTube videos have been super, super shadow banned. And it's really, mm-hmm. really frustrating to do anything with the channel just because, I mean, you can't find that stuff if you were, like, dedicated to putting in the exact right term into Google.
It's difficult to find the channels at this point.
Yeah. I mean, even I have to literally put the URL in correctly.
Yeah. I was looking for Nowhere to Run and then Nowhere to Run with the K, and it's like bringing up stuff.
Oh, that one has long been that's gone from YouTube, actually. So the one that's out there is my backup channel, Verse by Verse BT.
Right.
Right. And that's the one that originally I published the real Ancient Aliens Debunked, the actual upload of that film, which, has almost 10 million views and was at one point ranking higher than Ancient Aliens on basically every metric that you could find. And now it's literally impossible to find.
I totally made a mistake introducing you, not mentioning Ancient Aliens Debunked, because I think it's probably one of your greatest works. And something that truly affects so much. Like I still hear people at work talk about, oh, there's the big reveal next Monday. You know, I think they're going to tell us that the pyramids were actually made by aliens. And I was like 2013 called. They wanted their meme back. Like,
right.
That's been debunked, my friends. It's been debunked. And I think that was a really, really great work that you did.
Yeah, actually, I think I did that interview with James Corbett. If you said you had a lot of interview people from James's show, I did an interview with him way back in whatever it was, 2012, about it.
The Art of the Debunkumentary. That was a great, great episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you want me to play this intro, Andrew, or what do you want to do?
Oh, an email from Nowhere to Run with Chris White. Bible Prophecy Talk 2.0, unretired new project.
He's back! He's back!
What's up, guys? Gons here for the Face Like the Sun channel. Chris White is back! If you guys don't know who Chris White is, well, if you're watching this, you should know who he is. He was featured in the first Age of Deceit film. He really helped me get this YouTube channel started. And he's someone that I looked up to in terms of being a believer and understanding the New World Order and all these kinds of things back in 2009, 2010. And he actually went into retirement, I think around 2015, but he's back and he's got a new project here. And I want to tell you guys about it. First off, go to BibleProphecyTalk.com where you can listen to his latest podcast. And also, let's check out this video. He's working on a pre-wrath documentary with...
And that documentary is out.
Oh, yeah. That definitely. Seven Pre-Trib Problems and the Pre-Wrath Rapture. Yeah, that's the one. I'm really proud of that. I mean, I think it's in some ways better than... it's in most ways better than Ancient Aliens Debunked in terms of quality and stuff like that. But I think Alan, I didn't do the narration on it, and that was by design because I didn't want me being too associated with it or whatever. Just I have a tendency, at least in that community, the Bible prophecy community, to be a little bit of a, you know, lightning rod. I didn't want to to make it, it was important for me for that to be as neutral as possible as far as people could enjoy it, because it's already obviously a very hot button topic.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you had thought of this, Chris, but you could have made quite a career for yourself if you'd gone, pre-trib and everything in the news is a sign of the rapture about to happen. You know, this is seems like a financial miscalculation on your part.
Yeah. I'm not doing that right. Turn down all anybody says, hey, speaking of conference. No, I don't do that. And it's frustrating because I think it's important to recognize that what we see in Bible prophecy right now is so tied to the Jesus movement in the 70s. Mm. And the Jesus movement was so tied to really right after 1967, this idea that the Jews were back in the land. So we had 30 years before Jesus came back at the maximum, maybe 40, so from 1970. But literally, a whole generation of people got saved believing that Jesus was coming back no later than 1988. And really everything that we see that's sort of peculiar to that modern movement of, hey, the Russians are doing this, or, you know, all the, as I call it, newspaper exegesis, is all around that. It's like almost a genre of Bible prophecy stuff. So a lot of these people are older, you know, getting gray haired now. You know, I look at the podcasts out there and hardly any of them are, you know, under 70. So I think that it's a matter of time before people, and especially with this kind of stuff, I was talking in a recent podcast about some popular teachers that are doing the same thing. You know, our latest thing was, just look at it. You know, things are bad. I mean, it's all right around the corner. And my sort of refrain over the last, as far as I can remember with this stuff, is that, you know, Christians have always done that. For 2,000 years, we have sort of demanded that the end times was in our lifetime. And there could be no other possibility because, and I always interpreted it as sort of like, because I'm so special, because why wouldn't it happen in my lifetime? So we have a tendency to make whatever it is in the news be what the Bible is saying, and they'll be willing to change the Bible. And a lot of times, as I've said, a lot of times that they had better reasons than we ever had. You know, think about the people that lived through all the popes and all the inquisitions. And I mean, literally 1,000 years of Christians being killed in the most gruesome, torturous ways for believing not the Catholic version of the gospel, for believing basically what the Bible says over the Catholic Church was a punishable by death offense. So for those people to write commentaries saying, you know who I think the Antichrist is? The Vatican, because there's some people that really are anti, you know, mm-hmm. And they at least had a good reason to change, you know, make it seem like, I think Mystery Babylon, you know, if you squint your eyes and hold your head to the side, it kind of looks like a pope, you know? So they had at least a good reason. We don't have even a good reason to be like, I think it's George W. Bush or Obama. We're changing right. Things like crazy to get to that point, but we're still
Jared Kushner. Don't forget Jared Kushner.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So, and in your you know, very detailed and very clear also, both the documentary and then the podcast that you've been doing on the subject. You know, once you hear that stuff and see the evidence, if you believe the Bible, you're not going to believe these things that you see in, I don't know, Christian prophecy stuff out there 90% of the time about, oh, this is, you know, Gog and Magog is about to start, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, I get some of that stuff is just far too complicated, I think, for the average person to get. The reason that there can be genuinely normal and every other thing pastors and teachers be all over the place with Bible prophecy is because Bible prophecy is uniquely complex. It is not something that you can get by reading the book of Revelation and feeling like you have a take on it. For mm-hmm. I mean, take Revelation, for example. If you don't know Daniel like the back of your hand, you're definitely not going to get Revelation. And in order to really understand Daniel, you really need to understand the context of the prophets, especially Ezekiel. The minor prophets are critical. Joel, Zephaniah, particularly Zechariah 14, and well, most of Zechariah. Isaiah is one that I have only just recently realized how lame it is to try any of this without a firm grip of understanding Isaiah. And these are intricate arguments. I mean, you can watch the film Seven Pre-Trib Problems, which I absolutely gave no, that it was important for me to be, I did not make that movie for anybody that needed some kind of primer. This was made for somebody, this was made to convince a scholar. This was made to convince academia. It has no concession whatsoever to anybody that needs to help. It's like, here's 2 hours on this, catch up if you can. All right. And that's and once you see something like that, you'll realize, oh, that's why genuine people can get this wrong, because this is a complex topic.
Yeah, I definitely think, and I do agree that most of the people out there saying things that, even though, you know, you might interpret them and people who know your stuff might interpret them as being just ridiculous. I do agree they're for the most part genuine. I think there's an element of book sales and promotion in there too, though. But.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know how to parse that. I can see it in some worse than others, but then it's hard to say, you know, if that is, if you did full-time ministry, you know, I've kind of been there in the past. When I first started this, I was doing it full-time, and that was one of the reasons that I retired, is that I didn't see a path forward. So, you know, we talk about the what is the model called in
the no value agenda? Value for volume.
Yeah, that's a good idea, but Christians have been doing that since time immemorial, and that has its pitfalls too, because mm-hmm. Especially in a church, I think I respect pastors that demand not to be told who is given what, you know, because that puts you in all kinds of boxes when you know certain people are the certain kind of donors, especially in Christendom. And when you're talking about doctrine or whatever, and you kind of, there's all kinds of things that can go wrong.
Yep.
Sure.
One of the advantages, if you can find a church without paid staff, that it does take care of that issue, but
right, yeah.
It is very tough to find a church with a pastor who has all the academic training and then is able to do it because he has another job and isn't paid. So you sometimes have to choose one or the other there. But
yeah, well, yeah.
So, well, you know, some of the stuff. You know, besides prophecy, I don't know, Tim, was there anything else you wanted to talk to Chris about on the prophecy front? Or,
well, I think actually, yes, there's just one thing. I just thought of this. I was kind of just remembering the last month or two and just listener emails and things like this. And there was one that came around and I kind of dismissed it, but I think it would be interesting to kind of get Chris's thoughts, or Chris, to get your thoughts on this. This gentleman wrote into us and said that they recently received Andrew's book. They also asked if Andrew's book back cover was
something that had been updated because it contains the vaccines as well as the old, masks over the faces of even the children, which was kind of interesting. But the end of this email, I thought was interesting, and I pondered it a little bit, but maybe it's something that Chris is kind of going to be more well-versed in. And he says, my thought is a recent interpretation of scripture that I have been rolling around in my mind. It seems to me the post-resurrection, the temple is no longer a physical building. Now it exists within the body of the believer, as does the law or truth that was once in the Holy of Holies. I keep thinking about this in the context of end times prophecy that refers to the temple, and I think the future abomination that causes desolation could be a desecration of the human body and not the desecration of a temple building. I think this could easily lead to the fulfillment of desolation through infertility. Just curious on your thoughts. Thanks, brothers. So I don't know. It was something I had kind of pondered a little bit and kind of, you know, it didn't ring super true to me. I'm thinking that there is actually going to be a temple or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's one of these things. It's a good doctrine, of course, that that in one very real and sense, the temple is now in our temple of the Holy Spirit, if we're saved. And that's a good doctrine that actually you can play out in lots of different ways. It makes it, it's almost a literal truth. I mean, it's also a sort of poetic way to say it, but it is also kind of a literal truth. So this argument has been made a lot of times for people like preterism and partial preterism, which they'll try to say, like, look, there's no end times at all because it all happened in 70 AD. And, you know, it's just in our hearts. And these kinds of things are very symbolic. There's no real 1,000-year period, et cetera. And some passages, I think you can get away with that aren't very explicit about it. I think others, and this is why the majority of you know, premillennials do believe in a literal future temple, is because of passages like in Revelation 13 or 2 Thessalonians 2, where there's no out for, in my opinion, for any kind of allegory or symbolism. We're talking about when talking about the Antichrist himself, you know, all these things. He's a man. He's doing this, and he does this, and he goes here, and he does this, and he feels this way, and he fights these wars, and it's all very not even a slight chance of symbolic thing. And he's sitting in a temple, and he's, you know, sacrifices are happening, and all these things. So yeah, I mean, even that kind of stuff, you'd have to take it all back and say, well, maybe all of it is symbolic, and it keeps cascading into further and further deals where your hermeneutic has to change pretty severely. So no, I mean, while I believe that there's certainly truth in what he's saying, it doesn't quite work out with the majority of what I see is prophesied about the temple. And in other words, it might work with Daniel 9. It certainly doesn't work with New Testament stuff about the temple, in my opinion.
Got it. Yeah, that's kind of what my response was, something to that effect. But it was something that's interesting. And, you know, it's, I can see where people get distracted with this stuff, especially right now, where, you know, I was realizing last March when all this stuff started happening with the coronavirus that we've never acted as a one world body before, right? Like, this is the first time we're all going to, like, you know, 2 weeks to flatten the curve and things like that. And now really kind of a creep, you know, revelation aside, it's just kind of creepy to be monitoring or not monitoring, but modifying DNA. And I think that creep level brings people back to things they remember. Okay, let's, you know, the Bible wouldn't like this. Maybe not. You know, where does this have to say? Maybe this is the mark, you know, just immediate mark of the beast or something like this. And they don't think on it deeper, but they want to go back to it. And I think a lot of that last year has brought people to it. But like you say, there's a lot of people out there who are, you know, teaching these kind of older thoughts about stuff where, I mean, I remember my dad explaining to me when I was younger that, you know, Israel is now a country. And so, you know, it's pretty much we're on borrowed time. And, you know, I think he later changed that. But I think that is still extremely popular stance out there that people fall back into.
And there's really nothing wrong with it because that was for most of Christendom. They didn't even believe the Bible was even possible to be true. So that theory that we were just talking about, that really developed before Israel was back in the land, because none of this would have been possible unless they were. So and nobody ever thought that was a possibility. So there was a lot of excitement there. It's kind of like, you know, when they found out that the universe wasn't eternal, that it had a beginning. Because of the cosmic background radiation, you know, you had people jumping up and say, I told you Genesis 1 was true. We didn't need to make all this stuff, allegorical. So the people consistently that saying, you know, yeah, the Bible is allegorical all the time, but when it's not allegorical, you need to take it with on its face value, and you usually win on that one. But no, the global government aspect of the end times is certainly a big deal, and I think even more than the Bible isn't particularly verbose on that. It's more of an implied thing. For example, it's not like, for example, in the Olivet Discourse, like Matthew 24, when they ask what the signs of the end times will be, and Jesus basically gives a huge list of signs. It's not like included in that. It's like, and there will be a world government, but it is implied. For example, like in Revelation 13, it talks about the whole earth marveling at the beast. And of course, with the mark of the beast, he's making every tribe and people and language and nation and all who dwell on the earth will worship it. And, you know, all these different things. So there's a world component and and same thing with a lot of this stuff. I think that, I don't really know. All I know right now is that none of the specific things, like, for example, that Jesus told us, warned us about, none of that stuff is happening. And that really does all revolve, a lot of it anyway, around Israel. Now, a lot of people argue, okay, maybe that stuff isn't happening, but this whole thing is getting obviously set up for a world government, and it's not going to be good.
Right.
And I would say, yeah, that's true. But I mean, it could be. I mean, you just don't know, right? You can't know anything until some of the stuff, the other stuff, the actual prophecies start happening. Then you can have something to sink your teeth into, as it were. But until then, we have to at least have sort of a vision for the future, or rather context, and say, well, humanity has certainly gone through bad times before. 100 million plus people were killed by Stalin in the most brutal, awful stuff. Mao, you know, and I was just reading I think I told you about it, Tam, the Gulag Archipelago. And it's just we have no concept that even happened in the world. That was really bad. And all these other bad things have happened. So it could be the way I kind of look at it is that we're all kind of always as a humanity on this ebb and flow of like really bad, especially if you just look at it from the lens of Christendom. Christendom like was born out of their first thing out of the womb, as it were, is like, hey, the entire Roman world wants to kill us. Okay, let's get underground and hopefully this passes by. And then for a short period, it kind of does pass by. Constantine says all of a sudden, hey, let's not kill the Christians anymore. And then it gets weird really quick after that. And then all of a sudden this thing that Constantine made wants to kill them for another 1,000 years. And they're like, oh no, back underground.
Even before that, the you know, people think that Christendom is like the government, or it's, you know, is one with the establishment. It's like, oh yeah, because when Jesus was born, they tried to kill all the babies in a whole country.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. And you know, if you look at, I don't know, I guess I don't know where I was going with that, but I think that that's the main point, is that we have to have context for this, and this is something that I think is important, because you could say, well, what good? Because the way I'm trying to think of it like this is right now is this. I think that we're definitely going into a global, they're going to try for global. If they get it or not, I don't know. It looks like they will. And it doesn't look like there's any way to stop them other than a super, and it's okay in a sense. I mean, I feel this, the walls closing in. I mean, I guess in a way I would be black pilled. Maybe I'm like a gray pill, because I see the walls closing and I don't see any power other than the supernatural power to stop it. But I think supernatural powers stop this all the time. So again, I'm looking at this from the biblical perspective. The imagery of Satan is interesting in the end times, because he's depicted as a seven-headed, ten-horned beast. It goes on to further sort of define exactly what it means by that to a certain degree. The vast majority of Christendom sort of understands that seven-headed, ten-horned beast to mean seven occasions in which Satan tried to take over the world. Like, that's just who he is he raises up somebody in some empire, and he tries to take it over. And I think that he, through his agents, you know, we all know that the occult world is a big part of the elite sort of underground, right?
Friends of Epstein, servants of Satan.
Exactly. And I totally believe that they are all actual Satanists that are literally doing sacrificial stuff and are bought in 100%. They get their marching orders from agents of Satan. Demons, if you will, or whatever. They go to the rituals, they summon the demons, tell them what to do, and they're all rich, but they're very afraid people, and they would never ever go against that, because they're, when you see something like that, then it's over. You're just scared forever, and you do whatever, and it's a good deal, because they give you all this stuff and nobody ever gets in trouble. So okay. And they, of course, have all the psychological stuff because I'm better than everybody and smarter and richer and blah, blah, blah. So it keeps them in that too. But the point is, I think that they spend multi-generations thinking of the perfect way to take over the world. And mm-hmm. they've got – and everybody has always tried to warn us that was like – I think of even Woodrow Wilson, who wasn't that great of a guy, but he had that statement about like, I totally gave up the country. I'm really sorry. The people that print the money are taking over now, and they're never going to be able to be untaken over. You know, and it's like Thomas Jefferson saying, if we allow the central banks to be able to print currency, we're going to be left homeless on the land that our fathers conquered. They all knew if you give these people, and maybe they didn't have to think of it in these terms, but if you give people with multi-generational plans a blank check, the ability to have the bank in monopoly, then they're going to create a monopoly and there's very little anything can do about it. But I do see God throughout every one of these manifestations of Satan, basically just barely, if you could see a macro lens on his finger, it would barely move. And that bare movement of God's finger throws this huge wrench in the whole system and it breaks down forever. So like, I do think of it like George Washington in, you know, crossing the Delaware or whatever, that whole thing to me was not in any way planned by Satan. It was completely like, I believe this whole thing was supposed to be well on track past mm-hmm. this. You know, this 200 years was not in the cards. And no, they literally developed a government that was Satan proof for a while. Yep. And, you know, the bones of it were so good that it was the first time really ever that Christianity had just been able to do whatever. Yep. Do whatever, Christianity. Nobody's going to kill you. And that happened. And we became this beacon for a while. And, of course, the natural progression takes place. We become decadent and da 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 da. And then here we are again. And it's about time to see what happens again. And it may be. And it's maybe I'm a little too fatalistic in this. But I think there's too much power. There's too much money. There's no earthly way out of this because nobody is smart enough or brave enough or has the power at this point to take him on.
Yeah. I feel that. But still the context in the structure of the U.S. government with its 50 different states and 50 different governors, you know, we can drag this out for a while.
I think it may never really be conquerable. And even if you could somehow get rid of the state system and, you know, really scare us or false flag us into submission one way or another, even then the people's minds, you know, Mao had to kill basically his entire generation of anybody that was somewhat smart. Same thing with Stalin. They will have mm-hmm. to wipe out so many Americans because at bottom, even the ones that are sort of want to play along and liberal and whatever, there's too much American in them. They're like, I ain't doing that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to keep dragging it over generations. There's either going to be mass murder or they'll drag it over generations and try to breed the individualism out of us, which I mean, I guess we're well on our way with the whole, if you don't wear a mask, you don't care about me. You know, I don't care about your freedom. You should wear a mask for the good of humanity, regardless of the, whether or not it's real.
You know, go ahead, Andrew.
I was just going to say, or you inject people with something to make sure there is no next generation and then just kill people off from there. But
right. I mean, I'm still up here. I don't know what in the world is going on with this other than I can't guess. We don't know enough, you know? I mean, it could be that the weapon has already been done, you know, or it could mm-hmm. be that it's just some sort of psychological play, or I don't know. I mean, I've been keeping up with it as much as anybody else, and I still don't know.
It's something else. What are you thinking these days, Andrew?
Well, I'll get Chris's take on the COVID transition, but I guess before we get there, I just wanted
I'm just saying, what are you thinking about what's your current and the vaccine thought? Like, I've changed my mind a bunch of times. I'm still not sure.
Like, it big feels picture, like 30,000 feet version.
Yeah, exactly. Right now, I feel like it's maybe going after specific genes are more susceptible to it, and they're going to get taken out. I don't know long term, you know, but I reserve the right to change my mind. Andrew, it sounds like you're kind of, you know, some of the stuff you send me, you seem very concerned. So what, you know, 30,000 foot view of the vaccines, where are you at right now?
Yeah, I mean, going back, I guess I just been hoping that it was more of a, like, get them used to the idea of mandatory vaccinations and then, you know, just incrementally make the virus a little worse each time and sure. get more and more people involved with the vaccine. But it certainly seems like they're, you know, not at all concerned about the people that just aren't going to take it. And so to me, that either means, you know, Pfizer's just going to sell vaccines to the same 60% of people willing to take it over and over again.
60% in air quotes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or, you know, there's some aspect of it that can damage people that didn't even take it. And there's certainly anecdotal evidence of that.
Sure.
And it's all centered around, you know, seems to be centered around the spike protein itself, the ability for that to screw up, you know,
I don't know,
reproduction. They always go after reproduction one way or the other.
But. Yeah. And I think you can have all that. I'm a little down on the vaccine does stuff to other people that haven't got it yet. Mostly the propaganda doesn't fit that, you know, if it was all over, you know, because half the pop, quote unquote, half the population got it, then what do they care if any more got it? It's like, it's already done. But yeah. I don't know. I tend to agree. I think I'm still waiting on, I mean, I'm following all the damage the vaccine is doing, and I can see that it's having a good deal of damage to people, but I'm not yet sure that that is any more than like you would get because you just gave everybody in the entire world the same medical treatment and everybody is not the same person. So you're sure. always going to have a number of people die when you do something that stupid. Yeah. So I don't know if any, and obviously the reason that we don't know what it's going to do long-term is because we haven't really seen any long-term data. Nobody knows. So it's kind of up in the air at this point. I do think that I think of the Geert Vandenbosch thing and the new latest Nobel Prize winning virologist's name escapes me at the moment, who just came out with the same theory, and I am hearing it more, which is that the vaccine, whether they intended this or not, mass vaccination within the context of a pandemic, specifically the RNA, mRNA version of the vaccine, will essentially breed a new version of it has the potential to be far more dangerous, not just to everybody else, but also to the people that had not had problems with it before, which is a similar thing that did happen in the Spanish flu. You know, the Spanish flu for round one wasn't bad for young people. Round two, it was terrible for young people, mostly for young people. So, you know, and I think that I don't think gain of function research, as much as we think it is, isn't such of a much at the end of the day. It's kind of clunky. It's my understanding of it. But where the real deal is if you give it a good start and then put that in a body and then make that body sort of semi, you know, immunocompromised or however you do it, and then train the virus within the body context, a mass context, to train a virus, which then gets passed to another person who's had the same vaccine, therefore giving it the same weak immune response to allow it to thrive. It's like, it would be like, everybody in the world take half your dose of penicillin or antibiotics, and then everybody gets them, you know,
prescribe antibiotics to everyone at the same time, and then say just take half of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that may be what they're doing. That's one thing that I think is, you know, we try to talk about on this show, and it keeps coming up in my mind. Is, you know, this is basically at the root of it, Satan and his minions trying to hack creation. Right. Like God made us with an immune system, put us here on Earth. And now they're like, there's these people who are trying everything through everything possible. Let's attach this to HIV and this to that. And they told us it was some miraculous bat thing. And now it's, you know, everybody agrees it's out of a lab. And it's interesting. You start to think of the vaccine in that context. And it's like, OK, now are they using this to try to make it worse? They're trying to make it mutate.
Right. And that's just it. We just don't have enough. I mean, we're only, 6 months into it, at barely 5 months or whatever.
Right.
So into the vaccine campaign. And I think we're kind of at a point now where we'll start to see some data. But I'm really worried about this. I've actually got some projects out there that are trying to dig up just normal data. how many people died this year is stuff right. that you cannot find. Well, how many people? And if you could find some of that stuff, how many? If you could find the numbers, how many people have died of a heart attack this year? How many people have died of a stroke this year? Combine, put those on a graph, and then line that graph up with the number of people that have been when the vaccination schedule has. I can't guarantee anything, but my guess is that that data would show this massive spike in heart attacks and strokes that go along with the vaccination campaigns. Give you two more years of that data, 2018, 2019 heart attack and stroke data, you'll see that it was a complete anomaly, and you're the pandemic over. So they know that they have to keep that data hidden, which is really scary that the CDC just came out with this whole thing about vaccinated people aren't going to get reported. What they mean by that is that once a person gets vaccinated, first of all their guidance is mostly don't test those people unless they are, you know, getting hospitalized.
But if lower you do the test PCR them, count for them.
Right. I'm not entirely sure about the PCR count thing. I think it's there, but I don't have solid data. But in the sort of back and forth fact checking that and off Guardian, it did come up that what they were trying to do is say, oh, we're going to count those people. We're just not going to publish it on our website or report it to anybody. So all you guys get is the numbers that make the unvaccinated people look very, very sick. And then we get the numbers that get to say that the vaccine is very, very safe and effective, and you'll never be able to prove it's wrong. That's what they said.
This just came out recently. The study data on children 12 to 15, I think was what this range was. And 80% of them had at least mild side effects. So we're going to mass vaccinate kids who had, you know, you couldn't even tell they had coronavirus. And we're going to give them something that's virtually guaranteed to give them somewhere in the range of mild to severe side effects. And this is the mild ones, you know, not necessarily mild if they're happening to you. Fatigue, headache, shivering, vomiting, diarrhea, muscle pain, joint pain.
It's just super painful.
You know, it's just like, you know, appendicitis, but of course that could have nothing to do with it. You know, we can just throw that one out. So this is, you know, this and yeah. pushing it directly to kids. This is, you know, marketing. The U.S. is one of the only countries that allows direct marketing to consumers by drug companies. And, you know, most advertising is aimed at adolescents and kids and young adults because you get them as a customer early and then you can keep them the rest of their life. And the pharmaceutical companies, this is their time. I mean, it's going to, don't listen to your crazy conspiracy theory parents. Come get your vaccine every 6 months.
Yeah, this is so different in the sense that, I mean, I agree with you 100%, but we're at a level now where it is full on Nuremberg trials. Like they can't lose. They cannot, losing is not a possibility. They've gone too far, too fast with a literal murderous genocide. If it ends up proving that people are dying and they're high in the death numbers, which seems likely based on the VAERS data, which is crazy that we've got whatever that I think the last vaccine
46
or whatever
4600 yeah.
And normally vaccines get shut down when they have 52 deaths on VAERS, and it's widely understood that VAERS is like 1%, maybe 2% getting not getting reported. So and that's just the best case scenario. We don't really know, but so that's why I keep saying we're in like a race that is unprecedented. On the one hand, they have to censor, make sure no one can ever call them out for this, hide the data, shut down the people that have platforms, get total control very, very quickly. Because what they're doing is not just unprecedented for capital, you know, ism and drug companies, which are bad in the first place, but and have been bad for a long time and have done evil stuff. This is a world thing, you know. And the kids thing is a different thing because, you know, just them showing those minor side effects, and I read that study, or I saw it posted and read the article anyway, and And it's suggestive of, I don't know, whatever it could be. For example, the hyperactivity of the kid's immune system, you know, it being a better immune system or whatever, acting different. That's what a lot of doctors are trying to say. This isn't just like, if it works for adults, it works for kids. They're totally different things, you know? Right. And if it becomes evident that, which is seems to be absolutely clear at this point, which is that if you have had coronavirus, number one, you have a much better antibody than you would if you got the vaccine. Like you, and number two, you should not get the vaccine because you are more at risk for harm if you've had coronavirus and then get the vaccine. So studies have been showing that that's true. That's why people are like, hey, you know, you need to be testing people to see if they've had coronavirus before you give them the shot, because number one, they don't need it. And number two, it's dangerous for them. But I would add a third one and say that if, and I don't know anything about this. This is definitely me shooting from the hip. I heard this on a local report, but I never have been able to verify it, though I haven't really looked too hard. That if you get the vaccine, then it kills, if you have had COVID, it kills your other immune response to it. And you're with the immune response that the vaccine would give you, which the argument from people like Geert Vandenbosch is that if that is your immune response, is compromised, weak immunity, if you come in contact with a variant that is stronger and has been trained for this, then your immune system, you're much better in that scenario. You're much better if a kid with a normal kid immune system than a kid who has this weak, dumb immune system that's just going to clog up the works and cause him, you know, more trouble potentially than if he hadn't got the vaccine in the first place. So it could be a very dangerous thing.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's been my fear the entire time is the, you know, why was the animal testing skipped this time around? In the past, it was because they couldn't get through animal testing, because once the mink or ferrets or whatever engaged or encountered the virus in the wild, they had an overreaction and a lot of them died. And so that's kind of what I'm still on that, you know, worry, I guess, is kind of my concern about the vaccine. But
they want to make sure the kids get the vaccine before school starts, and you know, then your normal flu cold season comes in the fall, and if this is the reaction, we're not going to know it until, you know, whatever, they get 10 or 20 or 30 million kids vaccinated, and instead of a normal cold, kids are ending up in the hospital, and it is absolute insanity. And on that note, Chris, I agree, you know, like, they've gone too far to turn back now. But it kind of seems like they're trying to hedge a little bit, like, okay, we'll admit it comes from a lab, but that one Chinese lab. And, you know, if you really want to blame China, you can blame China, but let's not, okay, you can have Dr. Fauci, but not for the stuff he's actually done, just kind of.
And Fauci has absolutely been thrown to the wolves, kind of topical within the last 12 hours before we record this. His emails have hit the, last 24 hours, have hit the interwebs. Somebody has hacked the emails and put them out on the internet.
No, it's a FOIA.
It's FOIA.
Oh, well, there you go. FOIA. Okay, in the FOIA, I found some interesting things. I read through some of the emails, but there's still stuff that's blacked out. There's still stuff that's like redacted throughout the emails. So they're serving them up on a platter, but not really. Like they're still taking out the most critical stuff. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, all of this was at some point bound to happen. They've been lying through their teeth about the most important thing to the entire world for a year and a half. And there are smart people still left in the world, and they still have platforms. So that right now they're in a dangerous situation where we're still living in a world that has semi the ability to call them out. Whether or not they have the power, the people, like, let's say it goes to Congress and they take a vote and Rand Paul's the only one that says yes. Is that really any real power anyway? I mean, this is no victory, because what do we have? The Zero Hedge, the Gateway Pundit, InfoWars? There aren't that many places, guys, and it's a flick of a switch, or really what it is one more fear campaign away from doing anything that they want. I think it would be a good canary in the coal mine to see what happens to Fauci. I think that they're pretty much probably fine with burning Fauci if that's what it comes down to, but I don't think that they want to. And I think that they would go pretty far to get us distracted about something else pretty quick if that came down to that. So I don't think they'll burn him because there's too much. I just don't think so. But maybe. I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, he might retire. He's old enough to retire. But I could see Fauci kind of a limited hangout, and he decides to retire. But I'm not seeing like Fauci on trial for crimes against humanity. This is not. I'm not seeing anything that indicates that's where this is going.
I mean, he made it through AIDS. He made it through everything before. How long has this guy been there? He's been there longer than presidents. I didn't even know who this guy was last year.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do think that he's probably the highest that they would probably burn for it, and it could almost feel like the Pyrrhic victory that people kind of want, like I told you so for them. I don't know. Alex Jones had an interesting take. Was it yesterday? Talking about the opening up of the. Go ahead. Go with what you're saying. I think I'd go a little bit more off topic with what I was going with.
Well, I was just gonna get your take on Bill Gates.
I don't think Bill Gates will get burned at all.
Yeah.
No. He's too. If Bill Gates gets burned, then there's too many people that will wonder if they're going to get burned. He's too high up. That's not how this system works. The system works in the shadows. It works because people trust that they won't get burned. And it's very, very rare that it happens.
I think this could take us in a completely different direction that we don't necessarily need to go. But I smell some market crash maybe coming, or at least market downturn. With the stock market. And I personally think I'm going to go with the Occam's razor theory that this is just an easy way for Bill and Melinda to liquidate all of their stocks, to sell all the Microsoft stock, to do all that stuff. And I think we've talked about that briefly on the show.
It's not like it's getting sold though. I don't know.
No, they're, I think they are selling the stock and then splitting the profit down the middle for the, I'll look into that.
Why wouldn't you just split up the stock though? I don't.
Yeah. Because it would make the markets move. They'd be like, why are you doing that? And now they have an excuse to do it. It's a good point. I mean, he's obviously concerned about hedging. The farmland thing was all about, you know, taking profits right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Exactly. That was like a good tax break to get the profits now.
And it's a way to hedge all this funny money that has just been given to every billionaire for nothing, because the stock market went crazy because the Fed pumped trillions into it. It's a way to sort of like, oh, I'll keep that, please.
Yeah.
Well, but the farmland thing is also to push all the GMO stuff and, you know.
Sure.
You know, I'm not saying he'll be out there plowing the fields himself, but he's very interested in our the synthetic meat business and everything else. So,
do you remember we played a clip like 2014 on this show when he drank poop water? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It's like no matter where you turn, there he is. Like chemtrails. Maybe we got to reflect the sunlight out of here. Poop water. Yeah, let's drink it. Bugs. Yeah. Maybe we should eat them.
Yeah, but can't, you know, organic food. What?
Right. Yeah. So on the Alex Jones theory, he was saying that the new lockdown, getting, you know, lockdowns being released, will, whether it's intentional or not, I think he said it was intentional, but whatever. It will kind of make people feel when the new next wave comes, because I think that's where Alex Jones is right now, is that a new thing is on the way. It'll be much deadlier or whatever. Mm-hmm. And when the next lockdown comes, it'll be worse and tell everybody to go do it again. That this sort of time of reprieve is to be able to prove to them that, hey, look, it gets let up, you know, well, if you do mm-hmm. everything right, you know, you'll have that day in the sun or whatever, whether or not that's an intentional thing. I thought that it was interesting because I did have a problem with the psychological impact of the opening up now. I mean, on the one hand, I think it was always going to happen to a certain extent since the numbers were so inflated, not just by PCR test stuff, but also by the flu. I mean, I think COVID is a real thing, but it's not in anywhere near the numbers. And it definitely goes down with the flu because the flu is getting counted as COVID. So
don't forget, Chris, I know you lived there in the Great South, but we live here in the Great Northwest where we're still not even all the way opened up.
Yeah, I know. And it's I have to check myself every once in a while because
it's weird.
We were open basically as much as we have been now since 2 weeks after that first lockdown. So I think that Georgia was the first state to open back up, and we really haven't looked back. I mean, it got pretty bad with mask wearing in Walmart particularly, but now that's all over. But anyway, so the psychological impact of getting these people around here to go, hey, do lockdown again, it would have to be something pretty serious. They'd have to be very scared. And if they could pull that off, if it could be a real genuine virus at this time, there's no denying that it's deadly, it's killing kids or whatever it is, then we might do it. I don't know. But I could see it being better if we were scared, A, and then we also believed that, you know, it would be, if we did this, it would all be fine. But then I think that you're probably right. When I look at the Canadas of the world and the rest of the world that are still in these crazy lockdowns, I think that's really what they wanted to do. They didn't want to let up at all.
They didn't. And I think DeSantis and the guy from Texas, I think they ended up playing a huge role in just letting people. And then the data backed it up, right? All of a sudden, oh, they're all going to die. And Texas is like, oh, no, the cases went down. Even by our phony baloney methods, we couldn't get them up. So I think that had a profound effect because, yeah, you look at Canada. We're getting emails from a listener in the UK. He's down in Perth or off the just outside of Perth. You know, they're still basically restricted to zones within there. And he said pretty much that everybody's kind of buying into it. And it's like, well, yeah, you know, thank goodness they locked us down because we're able to beat this thing pretty well and just kind of moving on with their lives. So I think that is the end goal. You kind of look at the monarchy and then the kind of surrogate states of England. On the other hand, you know, kind of good news that we can report. Last week in London, over 1 million people hit the streets to say, hey, no more masks, no vaccines. Let's get back to regular life. So
I think I heard that was just hundreds.
Oh, I think you're right. You know, I think that there was a lot of people who were saying hundreds. I think it depended on which news source you were looking at. But I was seeing, you know, kind of live stream video, you know, via Twitter or whatever, and seem to be quite a few people out. No masks, lots of signs, end the tyranny. And one of my favorite sign, I think I may have saved it and sent it out to a few people. And it just said, they want us to believe we're all alone, but there are millions of us. And
right.
So they are encountering global resistance.
There's a big point there that I think America is definitely being obviously taken over. And the biggest victory that they had was keeping those people locked up from January 6th. Man, that has had a major psychological impact on anybody willing to say or do or go, heaven forbid, anywhere. Because now they feel like, oh, well, they just put me in jail forever and throw away the key. It's Gitmo. And they did almost nothing to scare us to death like that. Not a single protest in this country because we're so darn scared of whatever that guy with the horns getting, you know.
Yeah.
Getting locked up like that. But I think it could be solved if
we're scared to go to church, as Andrew's been saying for the last several weeks.
Well, I think number one, we have to feel like we can, you know, do a constitutional peaceful protest and literally surround city halls or surround whatever, because that's what it's going to take. And I think it almost has to have a pact of like, when they arrest us, don't let them throw away the key. Take this mob over to the jail and everybody sit around there, get 1 million people outside the jail saying, you better not, you know, whatever, let him go. That stuff works every time, 100% of the time. Yeah, it never not works. So protesting is the key. That's what George Orwell was saying about the plebs. He's like, man, if these plebs knew how much power they had, then this whole thing would be over. But they, for various reasons, don't. And so that message right there needs to find a hashtag, because if it could, it's the way to at least slow this thing down a little bit, not just for America, but for everybody.
It stops when we stop it. It stops when we stand up and try and do something about it. But I hadn't thought of that.
Peaceful ways.
Of course. No. Well, of course. That's what I meant. Of course. But, you know, I hadn't thought of the psychological aspect of them going after the January 6th stuff. It was crazy when the BLM riots started again. You had shootings in Minneapolis and bloody weekend in Chicago. And I saw a meme, you know, all this stuff's happening around. Then you got this guy with an ATF shirt or FBI shirt on. He's like, has anybody got any information about January 6th?
Right, yeah.
Anybody had any information? And it's like, which one of these two things look like a coup? Is it the military completely surrounding the Capitol building? Or is it these people standing with American flags in the middle of the cordoned off rope area inside the Capitol building.
Yeah, and it's amazing how little happened on January 6th, and yet they still went with the script that they had written, that it was like the worst thing ever. And it's
And I think I think Alex Jones outsmarted him. But remember, you said, you know, you reported on that, Andrew, that Alex Jones was like supposed to go in there and they were going to, you know, try and
they
say
they were inviting him in. You know, you lead the charge. Yeah, go in there, Alex. And
I think that was a lot of Antifa that did it. I think that's obvious now. It was a lot of Antifa, the kid from Salt Lake City or whatever his name was, and the former Olympian who was right there when Ashley Babbitt was shot. It was a lot of Antifa stuff and a lot of Patriots kind of outsmarting and not falling into the trap. But the mainstream media beat this horse to death, where I had that confrontation at my job. I said, you know, you saw that, and I saw something that was different than what you saw, and that's what's wrong with this country. And he says, No, what's wrong with this country is that you don't live in reality. And he just stormed off, and I was like, okay. So, you know, it definitely has worked, and that's probably the effect that they wanted, is to keep people from
protesting. Well, they knew that it's a pressure point in a coup. It's the place that you stop coups is exactly at the Capitol. And the same thing with the election stuff. So obviously the election's funny business all over the place. The recounts are talking about the recount. They've put that, I think partially the reason that they impeached Donald Trump for saying that, for, you know, alluding that the election was stolen. Basically, that was the story of the impeachment, because they then made saying anything about the election. Oh, the election is as pristine as a vaccine. It's basically like a Pfizer election. It's nothing ever wrong with it. And if you ever say anything is wrong with it, then you're a terrorist. Terrorists say there are things wrong with election.
Yeah, so then they impeached him so that just in case the real election stuff came out, they weren't going to get him back in.
Well, it just said it's just another psychological point to pressure their, you know, in a coup, you have to do two things. You have to steal the election and then you have to prevent a counter coup. So there's the two pressure points for somebody doing a coup, unless you're going to do a military coup. So by making the worst thing possible, which is you're a terrorist if you say anything about elections or you gather in protest at these places. So you've basically just completely controlled any counter coup.
Step one, fake election. Step two, stop counter coup.
You know, Trump, he should have just gone all. If he figured out what was going on, he should have done things a little bit differently.
So what's Trump's role?
But that speech on January 6th was one of the worst, most boring Trump public speeches ever. And it was, you cannot actually listen to it and think like, oh, that got people so fired up that they were going to charge the Capitol and take over. I mean, he's normally a very good, like, rally speaker and what have you. And this was not the speech he gave. So I don't know if he, you know, figured out like, hey, I don't want to rile these people up. I don't want anything to happen. I don't know. But
I watched that thing live on C-SPAN that day. I was actually off work that day, and I was sitting at home, and I was like, I'm going to watch this thing, figure out what the heck's going on. And I watched this whole thing live on C-SPAN, and the first thing that struck me is there's panic in the speakers in the Senate before anybody's ever actually even in there. And then there's kind of like some sort of a ruckus, and it felt strange. And then all your important people disappeared. And then they keep panning to this perfectly set up camera in the lobby, and all these people come flooding in and they stay in the velvet ropes. I will never forget this. They all come marching through and stay within the velvet ropes to go into the, you know, to the House and to the Senate. And so it just, I don't know, that whole thing just felt, then there's the phony from the beginning.
There's footage of Capitol Police opening side doors and letting them in, waving them in.
Or just standing around doing absolutely nothing. So, why aren't you guys helping? And they're just standing there.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Loose change type of documentary needs to be done on that. But again, I wonder if people are too scared to do something like that. Have they psychologically damaged us enough to not do something like that openly because we're, you know, I don't know. I'm sure it's coming.
Yeah. But I think even, you know, I agree on on the protest and what have you. But, you know, we got to start, we got to walk before, or we got to crawl before we can walk. Like, walk into somewhere where you're supposed to wear a mask, not wearing a mask. Like, let's, you know, take some baby steps here, people. We don't
let's
have
go
to
go to church, even if they say we can't go to church and can't sing. Let's go to church anyway and try singing anyway. Let's,
you know, go to church and not wear a mask and sing. And guess what? I've been going to church over a full year now, not one mask and zero hassle from any government authorities. They don't want that fight.
I know it's hard to, I always have to put myself in their shoes, a lot of people, because you know, you don't want to presume that they know all the things that I know and then they're sure. choosing to act the way that they do. I can't imagine how hard it would be just to be a normie guy going to yeah. work and watching whatever I did. I like to watch sports. I like to watch, you know, Sports Center. I like to, you know, whatever I was doing, I wasn't on Infowars.com or whatever. So there, and if, and you, and in your feed, you might have your Twitter people that you follow or in your Facebook, whatever. But once all that stuff not only left your timeline of the one window to the world, that is to say your apps and your phone or your social media, but it got replaced with just some of the most money that's ever been spent in the history of the world on propaganda. Mm-hmm. How could you possibly think anything different that, number one, all this was necessary, and number two, all of your friends thought the same way? And you know, if they got you also locked down, you're not exactly having the same kind of interactions with people that you normally would get, that sort of second tier sort of social interaction from that person that you at work that is you know, kind of smart and he has weird takes on things and he doesn't like it. And that would be your one guy, you know, right. some guy at work says yes. he doesn't like it. And if you don't have that guy, then you got nothing.
Midway through this last year, I made peace with the fact that I'll just be the weird guy. I'll just be the guy that keeps sending out the emails telling people not to get vaccinated. I'll just be the guy at work who says to people, maybe we shouldn't be listening to everything they tell us to do. I didn't, you know, before I kind of edit myself, I wanted to make sure that I'm living, you know, just trying to, you know, be all things to all people and try and do what's right. But now I've just, you know, made peace with, like, all right, I'll be the guy who's not going along with this. That's right. fine. Yeah. You guys can refer to me. And it's funny, you know, people come to me, you know, did you hear that somebody else did something, something, something? And I told them about you and they know that you didn't want it. And I was like, yeah, I talked to him too. And I'm just like, yeah, I guess I'm that guy. I'm fine with it. Let's just all move on with our lives. Yeah. It's, the propaganda
it's
is
critical.
It's been critical to be the person that speaks out about that. But, and I think we have quite the advantage because we didn't believe the TV.
Podcasts are probably one of as much or as more important in this whole thing. It's maybe the only other thing. Basically, what we're talking about are podcast listeners, because podcasting is unique in that when I put out a podcast, this is one of the reasons I've just started being like, I'm just only doing podcasts from now on, because it's only the only sustainable thing out there. 100% of the people that want that podcast will get it number one in their feeds in a chronological order. There's nothing like that, and nothing is popular anyway. And you know, it's not censored. It's not any way to algorithm it out. I mean, it just is. So, and I don't know. It's an important thing to make sure it's sustainable for the future.
And there's no way to propagandize it, right? Like NPR and all these other podcasts, in air quotes, keep saying that they're going to monetize it and they're going to do a podcast, and they, you know, you can tune into Audio Labs and all their cool stuff that they do. But that's not actually a podcast, and that's not what gets followers. That's not what people want to listen to. I mean, the most mainstream you can get, Joe Rogan, this is, you know, maybe they're sliding some propaganda in there. Now he's got the Spotify money. Maybe they'll get some weird scientists in there. Maybe we can get him to apologize for saying vaccines were bad for kids. But overall, the whole idea is just him sitting down with other people and just hashing some stuff out. And now we're able to do that. We've always been able to do that. We've been doing that for so long. And I think this last year has been great in many ways, in that, you know, James Corbett's experienced a huge uptick in listeners. I remember last year when the lockdowns first started, but when I was still on Twitter, and Twitter was kind of a wild place where there was a lot of people kind of waking up to this, plus the kind of, you know, save our children, kind of adrenochrome, like weird stuff that, like, I never, like, was trending. because a lot of people were at home like, hey, maybe the government's lying to us. What else are they lying about? Oh, my gosh, the Karen's out there killing children and just putting all this stuff on Twitter. And it's like people started waking up. And I think we've had a lot of that. And I think that's why, you know, podcasts like yours are super important, and James Corbett, and even, you know, the No Agendas of the world, where there's a lot of people who are looking, who are like, hey, I don't have any friends or family that feel the same way I do, but I feel, you know, this is fishy. And we get emails from them every week, you know, keep doing the podcast, keep doing what you're doing, keep trying to be salt and light, because I feel alone in my world. And you're right. I think podcast is the way to kind of get through to those people. And I also wanted to say that last year when all this first started to happen, I feel like when Twitter and all this stuff was happening, it was like almost a great awakening. These people were really starting to see, okay, this stuff is wrong. What else is happening out there? And it's almost like they kind of learned the data as they went along, the so-called or would-be elites. They learned, okay, Twitter is definitely a central place for this stuff. We got to start axing accounts on Twitter. And we got to start, you know, locking these people down. We got to start censoring this. We got to start doing this. And they kind of learned in real time. And then, Andrew, you texted me just this morning, one of the biggest anti-vax Twitter accounts out there got taken down. And it's literally just Sally at Sally KP, who is tweeting vaccine adverse reactions out. You know, that one's being removed today. So, you know, it started off, it was the adrenochrome folks that were removed. Then it's the election is fake. People are getting removed. And now we're all the way down to anti-vaxxers are being removed.
Don't forget the corona or COVID comes from a lab. People getting removed.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which
crazy people.
Zero Hedge was removed, and one of the Fauci emails that came out was from the day before, and someone had sent Fauci a link to a Zero Hedge story.
Mm.
So interesting timing there. Yeah. Like, hey man, this is what people are saying. What's going on? And but there's no response from Fauci other than like, we'll talk about it or something.
He didn't even respond with his patented, I didn't have time to read all that. Which
didn't he forward it to somebody and say, take care of this or something?
Yes.
Yeah. So then, interestingly enough, part of the take care of this was getting Zero Hedge kicked off of Twitter. But
oh, it looks like Jack Dorsey's in on the take, and Zuckerberg and Google. And
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's tempting to see some of this as like minor victories, but I'm just, if they're starting, I mean, they're still doing it. I mean, here's I think the biggest problem. Well, it's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is that there's tyrants in control over the information. But the second biggest problem is that there's no financial incentive for anybody to do anything right or true in this environment. So, like, of the Gateway Pundit or whatever, of these, you know, five actual news sites that are decent and will post any kind of story as long as it's true, you know, that are brave like that, their number of advertisers are quickly dwindling. And there is very little incentive financially for people to do this other than being true believers, you know, and willing to not only risk everything, to risk at this point their lives and their careers and everything else. And so that's what you get on the one side. You risk your life and your career and go to jail for very little money. And then on the other side, if you will write the right thing, I don't know how many reporters Jeff Bezos has in his stable, but it's probably a kajillion.
But it's all the way down to even influencers. Like an Instagram influencer can film themselves getting the vaccine and get like $2,400 deposited in their account.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's just crazy. It's crazy because there's all kinds of ad dollars for anybody. There's all kinds of jobs for anybody. And I think that in general, this has been true for a while. Like, how do you get like a generation to go along with a bunch of clown world stuff? And it's just about incentives. And you know, I think of it like if I was a kid in high school and like I knew all the girls liked spiky mohawks, you know, man, I could start to notice that's an incentive for me to get a spiky mohawk. And I'm likely to get a spiky mohawk in that situation if I could really be proven that like, the girls are really liking the spiky mohawk. And that's essentially what's happening with every college and every university and every job. Everybody knows that woke is the way to get incentive. It's where the rewards are. The more woke you are, the more rewards you get all up and down the ladder from being a kid to the very to the very pinnacles of business. So it's all the calculus is always, well, do the woke thing, and you and people laugh at you and get, or maybe not laugh at you, but they give you stuff and give you promotions, and it's probably not hard to see that, you know, like you start to see the people that the New York Times are hiring, all the people that are leading this, you know, communist group at their college. It's like, okay, so I'll join the communist group because that's where they all the jobs get picked out of. You just have to be slightly sort of interested in advancement to recognize where all the where it's all going, where the money's at. And that has, that's, and if you get into a situation like that and you already believe this is what, where the money's at, then you kind of, it's a very easy psychologically to be like, well, this must be true and good, you know? And then you get really into it because you recognize if I could get really into it, then that those are the people that really get catapulted, you know, the ones, the true believers. So, you know, and it's already sort of a seductive message anyway. So Marxism, et cetera. So,
well, at least that never happened with anything like global warming or climate science.
Yeah.
The politicization of everything, including supposed science there. But yeah, there was a good interview, James Corbett in the James Corbett Red Pills, the Normies series. He did an interview with Alison Morrow, who I'd, to be honest, never heard of her, but mainstream journalist who figured out that they were lying to everybody and is now an independent journalist, so good for her. But that was kind of the topic they talked about, her, like, you know, do I try to, like, go back to the newsrooms and save people, or what, you know, does everyone know what's going on? But one interesting thing that she said is that she never worked with anyone with anywhere near the knowledge base of someone like James Corbett, right? Wow. Like none of these journalists that are so glib and like actually do the research and reading and to have the knowledge base of someone of the crazy conspiracy theorist. So, and you know, if you just look at the level of information you get from mainstream media versus kind of fake independent media versus actual independent media, it's night and day. I mean, all the stuff that's coming out now, if you were listening to, you know, James Corbett and No Agenda over a year ago, you knew all this stuff then. It was all out there. And that's just one other kind of side note I wanted to throw in there today, is that there's kind of stages of, I guess, letting truth come out. And this whole, like, oh, well, maybe it did come from a lab. Like, it 100% came from a lab. Anyone who looked at it over a year ago and knew what they were looking at would tell you, oh, yeah, this came from a lab. Look, here's the...
When people started testing positive for AIDS after they got it, That was like, it was like, dude, yeah, this is 100%. Somebody stitched this together.
Here's the HIV sequence. Yeah. Here's the proteins that are never found in bats, but are, you know, make it really easy for a virus to attach to humans. You know, oh, and these two proteins are right together, and you would never find these in bats. Oh, weird. You know, it's so.
Well, I was going to say, the media's even eaten their own with, like, you know, Matt Taibbi and Glenn Greenwald, two actual investigative reporters, I think, you know, who write interesting things regardless of political affiliation or certainly spiritual, you know, beliefs. But they have had to resort to Substack, which is completely independent or fairly independent as opposed to where they were previously, because even they were getting censored too much. They couldn't handle it. You know, The Intercept ended up being a huge sham, and Taibbi made his own deal, and then Glenn Greenwald follows suit and comes into Substack. So it's not even just the alternative news sources like your Alex Jones or even the, you know, the more kind of analytical like James Corbett that are being eliminated, but also even, you know, Taibbi and Glenn Greenwald and people of that ilk who are mainstreamy, normie, but still question the mainstream narratives.
Well, it's funny, like I think it's important to not be in awe of this. I mean, and to look down the road. I mean, there is no logical outcome in which this doesn't become completely censored. And there's not an out. We're almost done. It's over. The only thing that we can do now is to plan for how we will get information out when it finally does become real. You know, in China, whatever it is, 100%, 95% of the people probably know everything that the media says is wrong, and they don't wow about the crazy thing that the news said that day. They are, yeah, the news is wrong. But the only thing that they can't do is ever say anything about it. So that's the only thing that hasn't changed here yet. We need to, everybody can know that the media is wrong. That's no big whoop. That happens every day in communism. What doesn't happen is the ability for people to point out that it's wrong. And we're almost to the point where we can't do that. So I do think, you know, another project that I have going on, I haven't really talked a lot about it. Well, maybe I shouldn't talk about it, but it's almost ready to be talked about. But it's understanding that this is we got to think about another way, because this way is almost over, and we need to use this way while we can. But it would be imprudent not to think about it.
So you're not putting all your eggs in a new YouTube alternative.
No, the bottleneck is always ICANN with a lot of that stuff. I mean, gave ICANN to, I guess, whoever owns it now, the UN, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it was always so centralized. I mean, every .com, .org, .io, .whatever is all a flip of the switch. And you got to think of it like this. If they make a thing illegal, if they pass a law that says it's illegal to talk bad about the vaccines, well, they've got the switch. They say, oh, well, turn their website off then. If it's illegal, then they've already got the switch. So the only thing that hasn't happened yet is the switch hasn't been pulled because the law hasn't been changed. And so there's no, and when you start to really look at that, what is a possibility if it becomes illegal, you will be absolutely floored that the internet is nowhere near a free and open place. I mean, unless it's a new internet with new fibers, new satellites, new dark fiber is what they're calling it. It needs to be developed in order for us to have a chance.
What are your thoughts on like unstoppable domains, IPFS,
things like problem. This? Same problem. It's a bottleneck with ICANN. I mean, if you take the ICANN off, then it's over too. If it becomes illegal, it doesn't matter if it's unstoppable or not, because it's totally stoppable.
Well, and you know, it's certainly not industry, but I can tell you, working for a small internet service provider, there is a huge push that it's like you either need to get big or get absorbed into one of the big guys, because it's this era of just lots of kind of small, independent, competitive ISPs is going away, because they want to have it that, you know, I think they would like to get rid of home internet altogether and just everyone, it's your 5G cell plan and everyone's got 5G and, you know, there's three companies that offer it and those are your options.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I mean, it's going to be that. I mean, the question of how to do anything else and just even to do evangelism, because this is so I mean, everything. I mean, you would be surprised. I mean, you could say, okay, ICANN's out of the thing. Well, maybe you can buy IP addresses and own it from certain, I can't remember the name of the two groups that are centralized, that you can buy an IP address. Sometimes you can luckily get, you know, maybe $8,000-$10,000, but they can go as high as $1 million or whatever. And even then, it's just a matter of like, it's still centralized because you have to buy it and register it and this whole thing. You can't have one independently or whatever. So there's no way to publish something on this internet. This is internet 1.0. And you know, think about, oh, well, what about the dark web or whatever? Well, that's still the same problems. All the same problems, the exact same things with the dark web. And the dark web gets shut down all the time. People that are, you know, illegal on the dark web. But so, I don't know. And I think that, I don't know. It's going to be interesting, because this is my thinking on this. If the Lord tarries, as they say, this is just another cycle in humanity, in which communism will take over for a while. It's going to be a little bit worse than all the others, and it may be longer lasting than all the others, because they've got a whole new bag of tricks this time, including cameras and all this technological stuff. So it may, once they close that down on us, it will be very difficult to, by human standards, to get out of it. But if that's the case, it may happen. And if the censorship happens, I think they'll finally, you can already see that though censorship right now is focused on the sort of macro topics, this thing about elections or this thing about vaccines, mm-hmm. It's always going to be about Christianity, because Christianity is ultimately, as China calls it to this day, a enemy of the state, or however, I can't remember. It's basically saying it's dangerous for state ideology.
Right. In my lifetime, it's never been more evident how counterculture at this point Christianity really is. Like, true, I follow Jesus, churches aside, you know, legalism and stuff aside, there's never been, in my lifetime, it's never been more evident how counterculture it is, because it says no to, in one fell swoop, you're done with all of the wokeness, whoomp, it's gone. All of the communism, woof, it's gone. And all of this, hey, give up your personal freedoms so that other people can feel safe stuff. All that stuff is gone. Pretty much it's just follow Jesus, love others, and see, you know, kind of let the chips fall where they may. And, you know, as Andrew has been saying for months, and James as well, let the tyrants be tyrants and just let the chips fall where they may. And that's, you know, that's the dangerous part. And I think that, you know, Chris, you always talk about the idea of Christians being sacrificed or being killed or being persecuted being something that leads so many other people into Christendom or to become Christians, because that, you know, seeing that actually take place is more effective than some sort of televangelist or some sort of, you know, hey, send in some money and let's pray over the internet type of deal.
Right. Yeah, I think so. I think it would be a good thing for the church. The church can really feel like the church, which is good, because, you know, I think one of the things that we lack, and as in the West, is to really have any kind of real power. And it's not because we don't have, I guess it kind of is that we don't have faith. But what I mean by that is, I mean, we certainly have faith in Christ, and, you know, true Christians are genuinely saved and all this other stuff, but we don't really need God at all. I mean, we got everything, right. God. And if we get sick, we, you know, we'll pray for cure to cancer, but we're also going to go to do all the stuff, which is of course fine. But what my point is that it's different from being in a prison cell in China where you're,
right.
Where your like cellmate is a rotting body and it's a, they're going to kill you next. That's a different level of need. And in those scenarios and stories, you find that that's when miracles are happening, because that, yep. God's doing all kinds of stuff there in that moment. I had an interesting experience the other day. I was talking with a guy at I highly recommend something called Epic, EPIK.com, for if you're wanting a server. I think this guy is really in the situation to go the long haul with you in terms of your server. You would be amazed at the stuff that he's doing with this future internet thing. Anyway, it's a long story. But you can also get a forever domain there, a resilient domain. Even though it's .com, it's essentially internet 2.0 ready. It's a long story. I don't fully understand it all myself, but I know him and I know who he's recommended by, and I'm all in on Epic. So the thing is when I was talking to this guy, I was talking to, you know, probably a millionaire or something like that. But he was a guy that was just totally all in on kingdom stuff, you know, was willing to do anything. And once you sort of get to that level of like, whatever, let's just do it. You know, God tells us what to do it and we do it. And once you get to that level, stuff starts to happen. You know, it's like God is over here. God has been being a missionary, saving people, miracles happening, things coming together, preparations for all this, you know, stuff that's coming. Miracles, miracles, miracles every day, all day. And I'm here like not even aware that it's happening, because I just haven't crossed over to be like, you know, stop what I'm doing. What's really important is your kingdom, God. What can we do now? I'm all in, you know. And, you know, it's that transition that is easy when you lose it all and right. You got nothing else. So,
right.
Yeah, all that to say that the consolation prize, if all this stuff does go down, is that we get to be real Christians, probably for the first time. And of course, don't mean that in the salvific way or anything, but in the another way.
Yeah, in the people willing to die for their faith way.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's, I guess, easy to claim you're ready to die for your faith or claim that you're not ready to. But when you have to prove it, when you've got a choice in China of attending the, quote, Christian church that teaches communism before the Bible, or attending an underground house church that you can be thrown in a thrown in prison for, or sent to a camp, or just killed outright for, you know, this, we're seeing glimpses of it. And I think Tim's not, might not be on my side on this one, but, you know, look at your church. Are they pushing vaccines? Are they pushing masks? Are they pushing all the same, the stuff the government wants them to be pushing? Get out of there and go find a new church. Like, this is your chance.
Why am I not on your side?
This is your, you know, this is the divider. You know, you might not be able to find someone with all the exact same theology, but if you could tell whether they're on Satan's side or God's side at this point. So I think that's a blessing that this has really shown true colors, especially of churches. You know, where it's not easy, not on God's side
or the world's side, maybe.
I would typically agree with that basic sentiment, but I would again say that it does presume that they know all the things that you know and then choose to make the decisions that they do. And pastors are uniquely just really in trouble because,
it's almost
number
like
one,
the pyramidic structure wasn't the one that they made for the church.
Yeah, well, that is certainly part of it. But also, in the midst of this epidemic, they've been hit from all sides, pinged from literally every single person on about every single thing. And they probably daily get some kind of different thing. And it is just probably really hard to be a pastor in this.
And they get bailed out, too, right? Like, a lot of money came to bailouts for churches. Am I mistaken in that?
Well, I can just tell you, if your pastor is sending along stuff, watch, if you're not sure about the vaccine, watch this from Francis Collins.
Right,
just
right.
Get
and
out.
And obviously, if they're super into it like that, and I think that it shows a lack of discernment.
Yes.
And I think that that's the reason I tend to agree with the sentiment, is because I think that there is a general amount of discernment that even though your typical Christian, which your typical pastor should be, is seeing things in a different light and has a different worldview, they should be able to see this is not quite right and therefore not be super all in all the time about it. And if they are, you're absolutely right. There's probably something wrong. But I can see a scenario where, again, people just they watch Fox News. That's the limit of the information that they're getting. And if they watched anything, if that is what your baseline is in terms of how you determine what the world is, heaven help how anybody can make a decision about any of this stuff.
Yeah. This was good, Chris. Thanks for, we'll have to do it again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I listen to your show all the time. And I really get a lot out of it, and it really helps me to sort of figure out what I think about stuff too. So keep up the good work. I would recommend, you know, thinking more about getting your podcast and your domain name set up in a place like Epic. And, you know, at the bottom line is, if you have your domain hosted at a place like whatever, anywhere else, mm-hmm. GoDaddy, just transfer it to Epic. It takes like 3 days, nothing changes. Because if you want somebody that is willing to, you want to, because one of the last hurdles is you want your your domain name provider to be like, nah, I ain't taking it down, or I'm not taking their server down. Because it's like the last thing that we have. When it gets to that, we're going to be in trouble. Alex Jones will be the canary in the coal mine for that. And it might even be Epic, because I think AJ's on Epic.
Mm. Interesting. All you need is one woke person to be like, okay, let's get rid of this guy. Let's get rid of this domain. And then
he probably has his own servers, but I know that he is a affiliate. Epic is an affiliate and has been mentioned on InfoWars, so.
Let's push people towards your work too. BibleProphecyTalk.com is where they can find your work.
Yep, BibleProphecyTalk.com. Subscribe to the podcast. Podcast 2.0 apps have it and all that stuff.
Perfect. And also, if you haven't seen it, please go watch Ancient Aliens Debunked at ancientaliensdebunked.com.
Actually, yeah, go to the website. It's the foolproof, ancientaliensdebunked.com.
perfect. So please go check that out. That is one of the best works of independent media I've seen in the last 10 or 15 years. And that's mainly just because it took on such a behemoth of lies and really and showed Carlson. Everybody what it
Watch
was.
Watch it, please.
Yeah. Someone right. send it to Tucker Carlson.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks again, Chris. Always a pleasure to talk to you. We hope that your work continues to be fruitful. We'll be paying attention to it. Hope everybody else out there does as well. And until next time, I guess we'll talk to you then.
All right, guys. Good to talk to you.
A copy of this podcast, as well as links to each story covered, are available at revelationsradionews.com. To contact Andrew and Tim, or to support Revelations Radio News, please visit revelationsradionews.com and click on the Contact tab or Support tab. Please check out the other podcasts at revelationsradionetwork.com, and thank you for your support of this podcast. Don't you see? We're